This week on the Young Money Podcast, we have Mohammed, CEO and founder of Benji. We talk about his immigration into Canada from Pakistan, how some persistent phone calls led him from homelessness to a career-defining job, and to top it all off, he shares with us the most thorough answer to the million-dollar question we have ever had on the Young Money Podcast. That and much more coming right up. Welcome to the Young Money Podcast. I'm JP.
And I'm Adrian.
And today we have a very special guest with us, Mohammed. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So do you want to start off with how your parents were with money growing up and, you know, how you perceived money while you were growing up and really just sort of how your general upbringing was?
I mean, it's a little bit more complex than most people's, specifically because I grew up in Pakistan and I moved to Canada when I was about 12. So while we were in Pakistan, I would say we lived a fairly middle class lifestyle in the sense that, you know, I didn't really have to think much about money or second guess like a thing that I wanted that I couldn't get it for most part. So fairly privileged. And then when we moved to Canada, it was essentially went from middle class to very low income, you know, shopping at Goodwill, just both parents working, and then me just trying to understand why I can't go to Stitches, if you remember that, and buy a new pair of jeans, why I have to go to Walmart or Goodwill, and I can't do that. So, I mean, it had been a bit of a shift and took me some time to understand all of it. But overall, I'd say like I didn't really learn too much about money in a good sense. I learned, I guess, all the things not to do for my parents, but not so much like what are the things I should be doing with my money, which isn't great. I mean, my dad, he was way too generous with his money. You know, like somebody need help. It's like, okay, here you go. Here's money. But with that generosity can also come, you know, abuse and people can take advantage. So that can be frustrating when you're like, I could be having that money, but it's what it is. And then your mom who, you know, wants to spend the money that comes in because it's exciting. It's her way of showing appreciation. So it's both are good things if you think about it, but at the same time, they're also bad things when you think about the longevity of it all. So it had been a very interesting, I would say, lesson to just sort of see them and be like, okay, I want to do some of this, be generous, but I don't want to just be completely oblivious to where my money is going or how much of it I'm giving away.
Yeah, I mean, when you're saying about some of the sort of negative repercussions of, let's say, your dad's habits, you're saying about being overly generous when you were a child. What's an example of that that you saw, if you don't mind me asking?
Nowadays people barely have kids, and if they do, no more than two, I would say. But back then, or I'm sure maybe even for your parents, they were probably part of a larger family. So my dad was the second youngest out of a group of seven, and for him being an entrepreneur, he, you know, earned his money and became essentially the person that was making the most money in the family. But as a result of that, when you have a large family and everyone's kind of trying to make ends meet or just trying to get something started, they look to him to help them out. And when it's family, it can be very hard to say no. And so in those instances where it's like, hey, and so-and-so's daughter is getting married, we need to, figure out how to like get all this stuff done. It's like, hey, don't worry. Like, I will help and I will do my best. Or it's like, hey, we're thinking of starting a business, but don't have the money. It's like, hey, don't worry, I will help. It's always just someone needs something and he wants to make sure that he's there to support them. Those are just, I suppose, some examples that come to mind.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like you said, it's good in some circumstances, but can definitely be abused by people who might not be acting in good faith. But it seems like you had probably a very generous dad.
I mean, I would say generous, yes, but at the same time, he was, I would say, also like ridiculously frugal. So for him, it's like he doesn't care about material things. He's just like, oh, somebody has this furniture on the side street. It looks pretty in good shape. Let's take it in and we'll fix it up. And it's like, why? It's garbage. And it's like, no, it's not garbage. It's look at it. It'll fit perfectly. And I was like, oh God. So it's so strange where you have somebody who's frugal or doesn't really care about material things, but then has money and then just gives that money or puts, I suppose, the value of that money to other things. So it was always very confusing because I was like, but I just want, you know, a pair of new jeans or whatever it is that I wanted, or I want to go on this field trip. And it's like, no, like, it doesn't make sense. It's too much. And you're like, but you just give so much money away for it was a confusing childhood, I suppose. But, you know, over time I learned what was happening as I started understanding money a bit better too.
So Muhammad, I'm kind of wondering what your like the frugality of your father, what role that played in kind of you working on this Benji project, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about Benji.
Oh, so the frugality part played zero role, I would say, in the early days, because for me, it's like, you know how, like, maybe it's movies and maybe it's real life and maybe it's both. It's that where your parents want you to do something so badly, or they live a life in a certain way that you want to do the opposite. So for me, because my dad was frugal, for me, it's like, okay, how can I live a lavish life with the money that I don't have? And how can I go buy expensive things, or how can I buy stuff with, like, you know, FUBU or Fat Farm, all those like branded names from back in the day. So it didn't really play a role in the frugal sense. It played the opposite role in that I made really dumb decisions about just spending money to kind of live a lavish life and not be frugal. Right. But coming to Benji, that sort of, I would say, over the last 10 years. So in 2011, I was broke and homeless, and in Australia, of all places. I was there for university. And then I ended up living on my friend's floor, thankfully, because, well, I lived on the floor because the couch was not that comfortable. But
you know, the couch is uncomfortable when the floor is more comfortable.
Yeah, you have no idea. And, you know, you learn to value bread and beans and the occasional tuna when it goes on sale. But since sort of that incident in my life, it's sort of just been trying to understand how I can better figure out finances, better figure out my life, and not be in that same place that I was. And so over the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, I had been doing freelance work on the side while I worked in tech. And I, you know, started a Shopify store selling Turkish towels and cotton blankets. I hosted events, did photography, just anything that I could like learn or come across that I thought was exciting or fun. I did it. And as a result of that, what happened is just I have this income that I have to now report, but then I try to figure out what are my expenses, and my expenses got confusing because I, of course, have multiple different bank accounts and credit cards because I just want to like try what every other bank is offering and what they're providing, I guess. And as a result of that, I would have multiple statements and then put all the expenses in a spreadsheet before I go to my accountant. And I just hated it. I hated how complex it had to be. And I would use, you know, FreshBooks, Wave, QuickBooks. I tried using them and I just found it so frustrating because it's accounting language that I don't understand. Like, does my Spotify subscription, is that professional development? Is that advertising? Is that home office expense? Like, what is it? And I didn't understand. I was just like, just tell me if it's like website expense. Is it, you know, music streaming? And then have something else take care of it and categorize it accordingly in a CRA compliance manner. So I had this idea, I think it was 3 years ago now, that, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was like an AI that could read through your bank statements and then categorize everything for you? And all you have to do is like, yep, that looks good. That was a business expense. And it just gives you all the spit out. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool. But I was like, I'm not a developer. I have no concept of how any of this would happen. And yet last year around April, when it's tax time all over again, I came across this article on BetaKit. And in that, it said, hey, Plaid, which is this technology company now owned by Visa, is now supporting Canada. And I was like, oh my God, that's the technology I wanted and I've been thinking about. And we can use that to then build out a whole solution. And that put me on this path to Benji. Actually, I lied. It didn't put me on a path because I decided not to pursue Benji because I guess I'd been watching way too much Shark Tank to be like, I don't want to be a wantrepreneur. So for about a month, I did pursue it.
What's your definition of a wantrepreneur?
So if you watch Shark Tank, you'll know that Mark Cuban loves to call people wantrepreneurs. And these wantrepreneurs are people that are wannabe entrepreneurs. And it's people that don't understand the concept of running a business, starting something from scratch, right, like having a hustle for it and serious determination. It's just people that it's like, oh, like this seems like a really cool thing. Yeah, we should start it off. And the minute it starts to feel in their heart, it's just like, oh, it wasn't working out anyways and move on to another thing. Right. Or it's like, oh no, like I could be making phone calls, but I choose not to because I have like, you know, I have other commitments that I have to put forward. And it's like, well, like it's either you're doing it or not. And well, maybe it's not that black and white, but that's kind of the entrepreneur. So, I decided not to pursue Benji. And only it was like a month later, my partner, she's like, hey, you know, you've been thinking about this a lot. You've been talking about this a lot, but you haven't done anything about it. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to like start something that I'm not going to be committed to. And she's like, look, like you could just test it for about a few weeks, see what the market says. And if there is no interest in the market, then you stop. But at least you tried and you know. And I was like, whoa, you're so smart. Wow, that's amazing. So I just put together a survey and I like posted it on Twitter and some Facebook groups. And within 2 days, we had over like 75, 80 people showing interest in like filling out the form. And that was enough data to kind of like put me on the path to it. But I still wasn't sure. But slowly iterating, learning, talking to people, get onto Hangouts, asking them to show me their spreadsheets, show me their FreshBooks, learning from them about how they're handling money. But that kind of became essentially more and more insights into what now is Benji. And Benji is an online tax solution. We find tax write-offs for Canadian freelancers specifically. So whether you're a designer, podcaster, Airbnb host, or journalist, whichever, any kind of independent contract work you're doing, we want to ensure that tax time can be as painless as possible for you. And yeah, it's a great way to ensure that you're never leaving money on the table. It's a great way to ensure that you're not overpaying in terms of your taxes. You're not paying a ridiculous amount of money to hire a bookkeeper. And it's just a lot less painless than doing it all yourself and being like me going through your spreadsheet.
Wow. I have so many questions. That sounds awesome. So when you were testing, like we'll sort of shift back to more financially oriented questions in a bit. I'm just curious about the actual aspects of like starting that business from the point where you got, you know, paying customers to that conversation that you were having with your partner, where she said, you know, maybe you should test it out. How did you then take the findings that you got from your testing and then use that to actually start the business?
Yeah. So I've talked about this before, and you know, I will continue to be the person that talks about it, is that a lot of times people think that starting a business, you need like thousands of dollars. Everything has to be perfect before you go to the launch. And most of the time, they end up spending money on registering a business. They end up spending money on like buying a domain name, setting up a website. And they do all this time and effort and, you know, they get kudos from their friends and then nothing else happens. It's just kind of like, oh, I didn't really think through how hard demand generation is, or I didn't really understand my customers, or actually there's 10 other solutions that are better than this. So I suppose for me, I had those same exact fears when I was thinking about Benji. And so a big part for me was just that, how can I reduce the risk as much as possible? And what is the risk? And the biggest risk is there interest in this? Like, does the market need a tax solution that's going to essentially pull all of their bank information and then be able to sift through it to find tax write-off? Because a lot of times when I talk about it, people are like, oh, doesn't Wave or FreshBook allow you to connect to your bank account and you can categorize it. It's like, yeah, but it's using an accounting language, not a human language, which then as I started explaining, I was like, oh, that's one differentiator. It's like, okay, cool. Then it's like, as I started talking to more people, I started getting more feedback. It's like, oh, but like, you know, I always get confused about what it's. It's like, oh, we can have helpful tips. So every time somebody raises an objection to me, that just, it's like, oh, that's an interesting problem. How can I solve it? So I just talked to lots and lots of different independent contractors from across Canada, and I just try to understand what it is that they're currently doing, what is the thing that they've found hard. And I started putting together, it's like, okay, here are certain assumptions that I have. So I have an assumption that freelancers are always incorporated. Like most people are not doing it just under, you know, sole proprietor or unincorporated. So that was my one assumption. Then I had a second assumption that everyone is registered for GST, HST. So that was my second assumption. My third assumption was that people are already using accounting solution. They wouldn't need me, right? So I had like a list of all these assumptions that I wanted to test. And the way that I tested that is I put together a typeform survey where it's like, I was just asked like, hey, like, you know, what kind of accounting solution you use, or how do you file your taxes, or how much money did you spend? And essentially it was long enough that people who weren't really interested would just drop out. But people that were like, no, I really want this tax solution, I want early access to it, they would go through it. And now we have hundreds of people that have gone through that form. But to me, that shows there is demand. I know what people are using, what kind of features that they're looking for, how much they're paying, which gives me the competitive advantage, if you want to call it that, to then curate our website to ensure that the messaging, the features, everything is surrounded and focused on essentially communicating to those pain points that freelancers are feeling. And then from there, it's like, okay, now I want to figure out what the design of it would look like. So I put the design together. Then I would reach out to some of the people that had signed up. It's like, hey, can I get your feedback on this design? And people would give me feedback. They'd go through the prototype and they're like, this doesn't make sense. And I just iterated for quite some time before we even made any, wrote a single line of code. And I don't code. So I had to use, actually, I used my tax refund to help me pay some of the developers to write the initial prototype code. So, that was a funny, I suppose.
While you were working on that, were you also working somewhere else, or were you fully dedicated to working on these like prototypes and kind of doing this user research?
Yeah, so I actually had left my job at a tech company in March. And for me, it was more so, hey, I want to focus on like pushing myself further. And I want to figure out a position or a role where I can really, the effort that I put in, I see in the ROI for it. And for me, it's like, hey, it'd be great to work at a startup, or it'd be great to like work on something of my own. And it was just more so like, let me just go and explore. And I'm privileged enough that I had enough money set aside from working in tech to kind of take that risk. And, you know, my partner, who has been just amazing, you know, she's like, hey, like, if there's a time when you're not able to pay rent, I'll help cover us. So like, just focus on trying something out. And if it doesn't work, it's all good. We'll figure out the next steps. And I was like, holy shit. Okay. All right. So I've got a pretty awesome support system. And that kind of made me take the leap and just sort of explore my next options. And during that period, I have a nonprofit that I've been running for over 4 years now called Women Ed Color. We had speaker boot camps that were planned at the time. So during that period that I was off, we were putting together these speaker boot camps where we take people who have never spoken in front of a stage, or, you know, are subject matter experts and have maybe spoken a little bit but don't have that confidence, thanks to imposter syndrome. And we turn them from never spoken to speaking in front of an audience with a 5 to 7 minute talk over a 2 day weekend, or weekends are 2 days, 2 day period. And I was doing that, but along the way, coming across that article and just could not, I guess, just being obsessed almost with the idea that, hey, this thing that I've been thinking about for the past 2 years, I can now, there's feasibility, we can actually build this, it can actually exist. that all just kind of sort of took over my mind, and I could not get it out. Like, it was just obsession, I would say.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really amazing. And it sounds like you really went through kind of a rags to riches story. And I'm certainly if riches were measured by, you know, your contribution to, you know, other people's understanding of finances, that's really great. It sounds like you're super ambitious and super hardworking, and I kind of want to know more about like your background in terms of education. You did mention you were in Australia doing some school. Would you mind running down kind of your like educational and occupational history?
Yeah.
maybe not entire history.
Not the entire history. Also, I'm sorry, it sounds like a job interview there. I was really like...
I get it. The reason why I was laughing is just because, like, people are always like, oh, man, like, you know, you must be, like, really smart in school. And I was like, no. Like, I struggled in school. There were some classes that I would love, and I would just get A's or 90s, whatever you want to call them, good grades, I suppose. And there were other classes where I just did not like the teacher, or we just did not collaborate, or like I just would not understand anything that they were trying to teach me. And I would just almost fail the class, if not fail the class, and then go take summer school. So it came to a point where I even took a year off, or my last year in high school, I took a year off and just worked. I was working at McDonald's. So I worked there while, you know, all my friends would come to lunch and see me working, which at first was kind of embarrassing. But over time, you're just like, I don't know. And the reason for that is, you know, being an immigrant, my parents are figuring their shit out. And of course, my parents split. So it was just a single mom trying to, I guess, put food on our table. And while she's trying to put food on the table, I'm working at McDonald's, so I can then buy things that I want and not have to be a burden on her. So it was kind of messed up. So along all that, you don't have somebody who's like, hey, actually, here's how OSAP works. By the way, if you want to get into college or university, here are the classes you have to take, and you have to plan all of this in like grade 9, because then it has a snowball effect over time. So I had no understanding of any of that. Yeah. But in terms of, you know, like job, my first job was at McDonald's, and like I had it at 15, if not even before that, because I like for the longest time I thought you had to be 16 to get a job. And then in class, one of my friends like, yeah, I'm working at McDonald's. I was like, aren't you 15? He's like, yeah, you can start at McDonald's when you're like 15 or 14. And I was like, oh my God. And the very next day I went and applied for the job at McDonald's just because I was like, I want to work. I want to have, you know, my own money, and I want to be able to like support where I can, but then also just never have to like ask for money. I want to be able to have my own. So
you can finally get those jeans from Stitches.
Not Stitches. I upgraded to what was the Rockaway from JC.
Oh, nice. Rock is in the building.
yeah. So I definitely upgraded from Stitches to that. So my first job at 15, I worked at McDonald's. I worked there for 4 years. Every year I got a promotion, and by the end of it, I was a manager. And the reason why they wouldn't promote me further is because they wanted me to work full time. And I was like, well, I wanted to go to college. And they're like, oh, well, like, you know, we need you to be doing full time. We can't work. So it's like, oh, okay. So like ended up getting a job at TD. And I worked there as a cashier. And then I was just about to move up to, you know, what's it called? Financial advisors. You go into the office and you like, So I was getting all worked up for that. I was getting all the training for that. And then I got into a car accident pretty badly. And I somehow managed to walk away with like just bruises and some physiotherapy. I mean, nowadays, like my knees and my shoulders like are not as good as they used to be, but for as bad as the car was, being T-bone and just going from a sedan to a mini, I was fairly lucky. So it was like good job, people working at Mazda and your airbag system and everything. but that kind of planted the seed. It's like okay, like if I'm working on this as an FSR, so financial service rep, and if I want to move up in TD, they keep telling me I need a degree. So it's like, okay, what is the fastest way I can get a degree? Because I don't want to go to a university now, because I had just went to Humber College and I got like, I accelerated my marketing program from like a 2-year program to like 1.5 because you can go through the summer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is another fast way? Because I don't want to do things slowly. And then I learned that you could go to Australia and you can take that diploma and convert it into a degree if you go there for 3 semesters on a 2-year program. And if you went to college for 3 years, then it's a 1-year program there. And I was like,
how did you even think of doing that? Did somebody tell you that, or were you just doing crazy research and you found out?
So it was kind of weird because like I came across these posters across Humber hallways, but then I actually ran into this one, this girl that I went to high school with at a party, and she's telling me about how she's going to Australia. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. She's like, yeah, I can convert my diploma into a degree and I get to be there. And I was like, whoa, this sounds so cool. I've been seeing posters. I was just kind of like, actually, this, like, why not me? Why can't I do it? So I just made the plan to do that. And then I realized that I don't even have a citizenship, let alone a passport. So I had to then apply for my citizenship. Because we were in Canada for about 10 years by then. We moved to Canada in 2000. And then that was 2010 that I was going to go to Australia. Yeah, so 9 years I was in Canada, and we had not applied for a citizenship. Like, we weren't rich enough to fly anywhere. So it's like, what's the point of having a passport if you're not going to fly? But then I was like, no, I need to go actually get my citizenship, because if I'm going to go to Australia and study. So I had to figure that out. And thankfully, I was making more than McDonald's to start stashing my money away and start saving up for university, because international students pay a lot of money. And so yeah, like, it went from that to working there. I got a second job while working at TD. I got a job at LensCrafter. So I was working there. And so I was trying to save as much. And then when I got to Australia, I got a job at Foot Locker. And that was an interesting experience itself, because it was like a pilot Foot Locker. It's like dedicated specifically to running. So that I can now look at people's feet and I've been like, yeah, you're a size 9. And they're like, how do you know? It's like, oh, it's like, I don't know. It's just like, it's so messed up. Like, somebody was like, I was like, oh, your glasses don't have anti-scratch coating. And they're like, how do you know that? It's like, yeah, I think I just had a glare. It's so weird, the skills that I've picked up over the years just working at these odd jobs.
It's actually hilarious what kind of little things you, what kind of knowledge you pick up and stuff from these little jobs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. When I worked at Air Canada, I still remember all the airport codes from my days there. Like, if somebody's like, you know, I'm going YYZYUL, I'm like, oh, Toronto, Montreal, cool.
Yeah, exactly. You can just look at someone's luggage and you just see that strip on it and be like, oh, I know where he's been. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. It's like, oh, you should take that off. It's been 2 years now since you went on that trip. So
yeah.
But yeah, like, I went to Australia, went to university there, and I was working at Foot Locker, and it was, you know, I got to be there. I was super privileged in that sense, but I also didn't have the same, you know, access to money that some of my other friends did, whose parents were paying for them, or they worked at, you know, better jobs than I did to be able to afford to then take vacations. So when everyone was having fun, I was usually working, and the times that when I did have fun, it was mostly because the drinks were cheap and I could afford to do it. So that was a good time. But yeah, along the way, ended up broke and homeless, which is a whole other story about how that happened. But all I knew is that I needed to find a way back, and came across a job on LinkedIn for a business development manager. I didn't really know what that meant. I just knew that it wasn't tourism, and they wanted somebody with business mindset and some understanding of, you know, digital marketing. And I was like, yeah, I'm on Twitter. I think I know this. So I applied for the job, and they didn't respond. So I, you know, emailed them, they didn't respond. So I just called them, and they're like, oh, our interviews have started already. And I was like, oh, can I come in for the interview? They're like, oh, sure. Yeah, we'll call you back. tomorrow. And I was like, okay, cool. And they didn't call me back the next day. So I called them again, and they're like, oh, okay, yeah. You know what? Like, we're just about to call you. Give us a call back. And it's like the next day, they still didn't call. So I called again.
Oh, my God.
Okay, yeah, just coming for an interview this Friday. And I was like, cool. So it was in a whole different city. So imagine you guys are in Ottawa, right? So
yeah.
Think of it as like going to Arnprior, right? Arnprior is like 45 minutes away. It's not an easy, like, it's not just nearby. So think of it in that sense. And for those from Toronto, think about it from like going from Toronto to, let's say, Mississauga in LA.
Yep.
Okay. So I go there, take a bus. It's freaking hot. I'm wearing the only piece of suit that I have. And I get to the interview and everyone is in casual clothes. And I'm just like sweating in the suit, overdressed. And finally I got a chance to interview. And they're like, hey, like, you know, this, we already have somebody in mind for this job. We only put this up for HR purposes. And we only invited you because like you would not stop calling us. So since you're here already, you know, put together a sales funnel for us. And, you know, we'll give you 10 minutes to do that. And I was like, cool. Okay. That. All right. And I had no idea what a sales funnel was. At that time. I was just like, oh fuck. Like, should I Google this? Like, what is a sales funnel? So I'm going through their product. So, and I was like, man, this product's so shit. Like, they could optimize this a little bit better. Again, I didn't know this language. I'm using language that I speak with now, right? So it's like, oh, they can make this website better. They can move the button here. The link here could be in the same color. Like, it's just kind of like going through the website and the product, and they came back and they're like, hey, so, you know, how about the sales funnel? It's like, oh, like, you know, I didn't get a chance to put together the sales funnel because I was going through a site and I think like there's so many improvements you can make here. And I'm just like literally just throwing shit out of my mouth because I didn't know what a sales funnel was, but I knew how the website could be better. And they're like, you know, like you didn't do anything that we asked you, but you know how to make websites look better. You understand this. Like, we've been looking for someone with this kind of skill set, but we haven't been able to like hire someone. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I can do this. They're like, what are you doing Monday? And I was like, I'm about to go whale watching, but what do you have in mind? They're like, well, we're going to go to Alice Springs for a webinar. Do you want to, like, you want to go fly there with us? And wow. I was like, do I have a job? And they're like, oh, we'll see after this webinar. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Whatever you need. So anywho, next thing you know, Qantas, the airline we're going to take, their employees decided to go on strike, so we couldn't fly. So we had to do the webinar remotely, and, you know, I tuned in and still made it work. And I got my first job in, I suppose, digital marketing. And from there, you know, part of my job was to fly across Australia to different tourist destinations and do workshops and seminars for business operators and help them get their business online. And if they're already online, how to grow it. And like, I was not fully equipped for that job, but it was amazing because I was just like, holy shit, there's so much to learn. And it's so exciting. And I was just like, whenever I was not working, I would be like learning about what I could be doing at work. And so within a few months, like, I knew keyword research. I could like tell you how to rank your website number one on Google, or at least get up to the first page. If you're on doing some kind of business online, how you can grow that business. So that really helped me. But at the same time, I knew that I need to come back to Canada. And so I came back to Toronto. And when I came back to Toronto, I wanted to do wine tours. And I like download a bunch of apps and I couldn't get into it. And I was like, man, I could build an app. And my friend who was doing computer science at Brock, he's like, yeah, you know what? That could be fun. And I was like, yeah, it will be fun. It'll be our app and we can do wine tours. And man, building an app is so hard. And I didn't know shit about designing an app, let alone product management and all these other things. But by the end of, I think it took us like a year or so, we had built a wine tour app where we had over 150 wineries from across Ontario who had signed up for our app. And we got published in a marketing textbook. And you know how you have those case studies in marketing textbook about a business? Yeah. We were that case study. And I was like, whoa, look at me. Like, shitty in school, but somehow being part of a textbook. That's awesome. But that kind of like started my path.
I think this is a huge like takeaway for anyone listening to kind of take away the fact that persistence is like a huge, huge factor in kind of your success and what you want to get done, right? Because it sounds like, Mohammed, that you are incredibly persistent. Of course, like the 15 phone calls to your first your first job there, and that's just an incredible takeaway message that, you know, you can basically go from homeless to having this amazing job that you get to travel and make a decent salary and make a decent living, all just through sheer persistence. And then the fact that you developed this app, and it's just it's pretty astounding. So that's really a great message.
I think there's just, at some point, you just have to be persistent to your point and focus on, like, how can you persevere? And it's, yeah, I mean, like, again, people say, hey, like, how much of it do you think is, like, luck, and how much of it is just your intellect or your hard work? And I was like, man, it's 50-50. Like, if I didn't, you know, call the company enough times, they wouldn't have given me the opportunity. But if I wasn't lucky enough to have been on learning about Twitter and internet marketing on my own free time, that when I started, like, talking about how the website could be better, and just happens that they're looking for someone that has that kind of talent, that was pure luck, right? So I definitely think a bit of both adds up. But at the same time, I also say that it requires you to constantly kind of just be looking out for signals and just constantly be learning, because opportunities, to me, are they come, they're always available, or they always come by, but you also have to be ready to capture them, right? And make the most of it. So yeah
totally. Would you say, I mean, we've talked about a lot of your background and things like that, and right now, would you say that you're somebody that's more splurgy or stingy? I mean, I feel like your background, you know, the relationship with your father, and then you sort of wanting to almost rebel against that and live a lavish lifestyle overall right now, would you say that you're more on the splurgy or the stingy side of things? And stingy, we use the word stingy in a positive way on this podcast. I don't think that it's bad to be pinching pennies, so don't take it as a derogatory word.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm a bit of both, and I'll explain that a little bit further, because, like, I'm sure there are probably people that are just like, oh, like, you have to pick one, and it's like, no, it's like there's a time and place for each thing, and I'll explain that. It's that when it comes to whiskey, for example, I have I would say like almost like a bad habit of like, oh my god, this whiskey is a really good whiskey, and LCBO has it on sale. I must buy it. A part of me is like, hey, you're being frugal because you're buying it when it's on sale. Right? So it's trying to rationalize it, but I'm like, no, but I know that whiskey is good. So that's when the splurge part comes in. And I would also say, like, when it comes to certain things, like, let's say, winter coat, right? Some people will be like, hey, just go and buy a $100 winter coat. It's a winter coat. Like, what are you going to pick it? For me, it's like, no, like, if you spend a few more $100, you can actually get a better quality jacket, and it's going to last you a while. And that took me a while to learn as well, by the way. So I still have my Canada Goose jacket that I bought, like, in 2008, 2009. Yep. So, like, almost, like, over a decade, two decades, is my math right? Yeah. Over a decade, yeah. And so I also understand not everyone has a privilege to be able to splurge that much money. So, you know, I recognize that. So for me, it's like, I'll be stingy where I can, and I'll be splurgy where it's needed, or where I feel it's gonna be long-term wise better for me. At the same time, if you think about, like, starting Benji, like, again, I started Benji with my tax return, right? And just, like, some cash that I had in my savings account, like, not that much money. So similarly, like, we right now spend on Benji about maybe $100-$150 a month at most. That's it, per month, to, like, operate Benji. a lot of people, when I tell people that, they're like, what? It's like, yeah, like there, we get credits from Google, so we're not paying for our hosting. I got this coupon code for our domain name, so we didn't have to pay for that. We have Gmail, G Suite, everything. And we got, again, credits for that. And then I found a way to like get an email provider from Google's app store, so we didn't have to pay for it, and we just use great Google. So like I will find all the coupons and discounts that are possible to maximize the dollar. So you know, there's a time and place for, I would say, all of it.
Yeah for sure. And I think that it's really important to emphasize that you're splurgy but almost with a purpose on certain things, right? Like given the long enough time horizon, that Canada Goose jacket has paid for itself, and that you didn't have to buy like 3-4 jackets in that time. You just got one, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Something that more people are slowly awakening to, you know, for sustainable reasons or just for the fact that it's just better financially over time. But hopefully that'll be a trend, I think, that will gain popularity. It's just like getting that one thing that's a bit more expensive but lasts you like a lifetime.
Yeah.
Now, you said whiskey was kind of a guilty pleasure, but what would you say is the dumbest thing you've ever bought?
Oh, I will tell you the dumbest thing I ever bought. It is the warranty, and it's like the top of the class warranty for a new car, which is also one of the dumbest decisions I have made. Okay. Because like, I didn't know shit about buying cars. And, you know, I went to buy the car with my mom, who knows shit about buying cars. Because I think it was like 3-4 years ago, she didn't even have a license. Like she would scream if she was on the road driving the car. So like I went with her, who also didn't know anything that you have to negotiate, that you can like walk away and they come chase. I don't know, none of this bullshit. And I was just like, yeah, I need a new car because I got this job that tells me I need a car. And it was so silly because, you know, we had bought the car, we had decided what color it was, and I was like super excited. And we sat down to sign the papers to make the purchase agreement. And the guy, he's like, you know, like cars can break down and, you know, engines might need changing. And so we have this warranty. It's only going to be an extra $20 a week or so that we can add on there. And like, again, I didn't know that you have to negotiate that, whatever he's saying, or that there's other offers. Or, hey, how much is $20 per week for like 7 years? That's a lot of money. That's like $8,000-$9,000, right? You don't think about it, but I was just like, oh, okay, $20 a week and, you know, I'll be protected. Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds great. Bought it, and that increased the value of a car. Like it was a Mazda 3, nothing fancy, but it was like, I think it went from like $24,000 to like $30-something. And it was the dumbest decision ever. Like buying a car, especially a new car, has like, to me, is now a dumb decision. Unless it like buy a used car, buy a lease a car, but like it's just depreciating. It's not even an asset. I don't even want to call it an asset.
Yeah,
okay? Yeah.
It's just depreciate. It's a splurge. It's an expense. So as you can see, I have very negative feelings about cars right now. So
is your Mazda 3 broken down, Mohammed? Is that why?
it's surprisingly,
the warranty just ran out too.
Yeah, my warranty has ran out. It surprisingly has not broken down. So which made me even more upset about the fact that I had the warranty because it didn't break down, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like why the fuck would I? And like, you know, roadside assistant, and came with that, and I never had to use it. So I was just like, I paid $8,000 for a peace of mind, which all insurance is, you know, mind you.
Yeah.
But of course, certain insurances are needed. It makes sense. Something for a car like this, where you can get used parts, where you can go to a mechanic that's not Mazda mechanic, and all that kind of stuff that can fix it, like. You know, I just, that alone, I would say to anyone listening, it's like, if you're thinking about getting a car, really consider if you need a new car. And look, if it has to be a new car, negotiate the hell out of the deal. Like, ask for snow tires, ask for tinted windows, ask for like upgrades, like ask for the world, because the more you ask, and like the more likely you may not get all of it, but you'll get a better bang for your buck.
For sure. Yeah. I think not buying new is something that not enough people know to do. Like, cars depreciate so much, and they're just money pits at the end of the day.
Yeah, and like we've been trained to think that buying new is like a sign of success, is like a sign of money, and like it's a sign of like your quality of life. And I totally admit, for a good part of my life, I bought into that. Like, I thought like everything that you get has to be new, but it's not. Like, it's no, it's just not the case anymore.
Or yeah. On that note, actually, that's a really good tip. And on that note, I'm just kind of wondering, like, do you have any like general tips for people trying to manage their finances, or do you have a common mistake that you can point out that a lot of people make with their finances or with filing their taxes?
Yes, I can definitely. So from a personal finance perspective, I would say pay off your debt if you have your debt. If you have debt and you're investing, stop investing and pay down debt. Wow, I cannot pronounce the words, hey? And look, unless you've invested into something that's like returning 30% year over year, or and your debt is only like 8%, then yeah, okay, use the dividends or use the cash that you're getting from that investment and pay your debt off. But pay off the debt, start with the highest one and just like make your way down. And by highest amount, let me clarify, start with the highest interest debt. So that could be like $1,000. That probably is your credit card for most people. Pay that off and then make your way through other debt that are also higher interest amongst the other debts that you have. And once you have paid off your debt, start building a savings fund. Like, it does not have to be TFSA, does not have to be RSP. Don't even think about those right now. Just have enough money that if you get fired today, you have at least enough money to, you know, cover all of your bases for a minimum of 3 months. I know this has been said there a lot, like many people have say this, but until you get fired, which a lot of people are going through right now, we're you know, in a pandemic and potentially even heading into recession, who knows? You will still need to pay your mortgage. You might still need to pay your bills. You might still need to make your car loan payment. Otherwise, yep, your credit's going to be like ruined for 7 years, if not longer, right? And that dent on your credit is going to affect you like every time. You want to get a loan? Oh no, it looks like you missed a payment here to tell us or something. Like, we don't know if we can trust you to rent this condo to you or to like give you a better interest rate. Did you know like the people that don't need credit are the ones that get the best rates, right? Whatever you can do to ensure that your credit is as best as you can, even if you have low income, that's like try and optimize for that. And right now you can get free credit scores through your bank. You can get a free credit score through Borrowell, through Credit Karma. There are plenty of solutions to see, you know, hey, like what is my credit score and what's going on? So I would say like pay off your debt, start putting together a stash of cash enough that should something go wrong, you're covered. And as that starts to figure itself out and you got a good credit score, start negotiating your rates. Because a lot of people don't even know that they can negotiate a rate to, let's say, a debt or a line of credit or even a mortgage that they have. The better credit rate, all that puts you in a better position to negotiate those things.
I didn't even know you could negotiate. what are bargaining chips that you can use to try to negotiate the rate down? Like I don't even know what I would say to try and negotiate a rate down.
Yeah. Okay. So this is another thing that really upsets me about how the financial system in Canada is set up, right? Is that a lot of people, their first sort of exposure to financial advice is their bank teller or like the person working at a bank. But what a lot of people don't realize, the person working at this bank is being paid by the bank to help the bank make money. They are not there for you. Right. So for most people, what ends up happening is that they go to this one bank that their parents bank at usually, and they get an account when they're kid, because, you know, when you're a kid, you get a free bank account, all that kind of stuff. And for most of your life, you never think about going to another bank. So here's what you do. You have some form of salary coming in. You have money coming in. Great. That's perfect. You can show some income record. Second, check your credit score. Is it looking good? You know, are you paying your debt off? Are you, you know, is your credit ratio to like your, or it's called debt credit utilization percentage or amount, whatever. Essentially what it means is that let's say you have $10,000 of credit card and you're using $3,000 of it because you bought a new laptop and, you know, your statement comes through, you're using 30% of your credit utilization, right? And so if you go above that, if let's say you're end up spending $8,000 on your credit card and you're carrying that over month because you're only making minimum payment, then you're perceived poorly because it's you're using 80% of your credit utilization. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, like I have to pay down my debt and like help me improve my credit score because your credit that affects your credit score in portion. But here's another thing what people don't know. If you actually get offered another credit card, most people say, no, 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 I don't want another credit card. But I say, yes, take another credit card. Because what's going to happen if you get another credit card that's worth $10,000 and you're, you know, going to be good with how much you're spending and how you're spending, now all of a sudden you have $20,000 credit available to you. So that $8,000 becomes 40% credit utilization. And that improves your credit score. It's kind of messed up. Yeah, it's kind of messed up. But all these things add up and most people don't know these nuances. So going back, you know, let's say you've got a better credit score. Let's say it's around 700 or more. If you're less than that, it can be a little tricky depending on the bank, but try and get to the 700 or higher. And it can take time. Like your credit score is delayed from, you know, a month or sometimes even longer depending on what's happening in your life. So let's say you have a 700 credit score or higher. You have some reasonable amount of money coming in. You can go to your bank and be like, hey, I have this line of credit that you've provided to me, or that I have this, you know, loan with this interest rate, high interest rate, like 8-10%, which in my opinion is high. Like I want to reduce that. Like I want to get a better rate. Look at my income. Look at my credit score. I've been banking with you for so long. It's like, oh, you know, sure. Actually, let me put into this. Let me see if we can do something to get you a better rate. And let's say that doesn't happen. Let's say most of the people, because you know you've been at the bank for that long. For them, they're like, why would you ever leave? You're locked in. But most don't think about it. But let's say you know you're like, oh shit, I didn't get a better rate. What you can do is you can just go to another bank and be like, hey, I'm thinking of moving all my stuff over here, but I want to see like you know, can you get me a better line of credit or better interest on my loan, because I want to be able to pay that off faster, and I want to be able to ensure that you know my business is valued as a customer and all that kind of stuff. And like I will bet you that maybe for some people, again, everyone's financial situation is different, but for a good amount of people, you're likely to get a good rate just through like being able to switch over if that your current bank's not going to give you a better rate. Like it's, and I've worked at 2 of the top 5 banks in Canada.
Wow. That's some really good information. Honestly, I didn't even realize that you could negotiate.
I'm definitely going to be using that.
Adrian's just emailing 5 banks right now for a new credit card.
So we have one. I mean, a lot of our questions are recurring, but we do have one that we kind of wait till the end. To ask, and that is, how would you spend $1 million if you got it right now?
Am I being taxed on it? Or,
no tax.
No tax, okay. So,
we're a free market podcast.
Yeah. I went up the Quebec side and went to the casino there, grit, and I got $1 million. Cool. So if I had $1 million, honestly, I would put together about $300,000 to as a down payment to buy a house in Leslieville here on the east end of Toronto, and to get a reasonable good. I am doing quotes with my hand for audio listeners. It would likely cost $1.2 to $1.5 million, which is a ridiculous amount of money. And most people be like, why wouldn't you just buy that outright? And it's like, well, the reason why I wouldn't buy it outright is because the house is going to appreciate, especially in a city like Toronto. And if it's going to appreciate, and I can write off the interest on my house and go through this process in that long manner, I'm only going to pay like what the interest on a mortgage right now, you can get a variable for about 2.4, 2.45. And if I can put the rest of my money on other investments, which is what I'm going to do with the rest of the $1 million, I can make back a lot more in exchange only having to pay 2%. Of course, it's going to increase over the time, but let's go with that scenario. So $300K spent on buying a house that I like to live in with my partner and our dog. I would put the other or another 200K hiring a full-time developer and a marketer for Benji. So right now it's me and my co-founder that are working on it. So it's a small, tiny team of two. And there's plenty of work to do. So getting some help to accelerate our development and our outreach can really help us with that. And so I've got about 500K left. So yeah, 150K, I would probably get a loan for 120K and buy stocks in this one company I really like. And I've been, did my research on them. And right now their stock's a little high, so I probably won't buy it right away, but I'll wait for an event to take place before I buy it and before it's in my margin of safety. And so the reason why I'm putting 150K aside is because if I get 120K out, I have to pay interest, so there's money for that. And then I have about 350 left, so 150K investing in startups, become a bit of an angel investor and support the types of investments and businesses I want to see started. And the 200 cash that's left, I would sit in cash because given how the next like year, 2 years is going to go, I feel there's going to be plenty of opportunities in the market. Pretty wonderful companies are going to come at an affordable rate. So I want to be able to make sure that I can take advantage when those opportunities come my way.
Wow, you've definitely answered that question the most comprehensively any guest has ever answered that question. That was awesome. Yeah,
awesome. Thanks so much, Mohammed. It was really great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time and really going into detail. I think some of the things that you've said in this podcast, I will literally be re-listening to them and taking notes. I think that you're the example of the perfect guest for this show. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for, again, having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. And for any listeners that are Canadian freelancers, please go check us out, betterwithbenji.com, because freelance life is better with Benji. And look, if you mention Young Money Podcast when you're signing up, we'll be happy to give you a 20% discount. So come check us out, and you get 90 days of trial, so there's plenty of time for you to even check out the product before you even buy it. And we assure you that right now, most of our users find about $9,238 in tax savings per year. So I'm sure there's plenty of opportunities for every Canadian freelancer.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
That's incredible. Thank you.
All right. Have a good rest of your day, Mohammed.
All right. Take care.
Bye.